This is the Amp Hour Podcast. Released June 19th, 2023. Episode 636.
Discovering Cursed Connectors.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble, Contextual Electronics. Welcome to the Chip Mystery Hour, where whereupon Dave and Chris look at a photo of a board and we're like, what?
We're doing a live teardown, folks.
Yeah. Someone else. So Dave and I were commenting that we like the Rode Go. Was it the Go 2, right? That's the one you have?
The Go 2, because what you're actually hearing from me right now is the new Rode Podcaster USB mic, which I've done a second channel video on. And then we got to Chris was talking about the...
I've watched and drooled over them from all the video channels that I review, which is a very dangerous hobby, by the way. Don't watch video.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Gear review channels
will make you spend money. Microphones and cameras and lights.
Dave actually needs that stuff. I just watch videos of people that, talk about these things. But it's a really cool product. It's got like local recording. It's like, is it 32-bit on there or is it just 24-bit?
Ooh, couldn't tell you. But anyway, it does it matter? Like, do you need, like, in a wireless do you need 32-bit or 24-bit audio?
If you're peaking or if you're like you're really really low, they have sometimes some of these modern recorders do 32-bit to like a ton of dynamic range. Yeah.
Yes.
Anyways, these are meant to be like, you'll see these in a lot. If you pay attention in like interview videos, often or YouTubers that you watch, you'll see these little black plastic things clipped onto people's shirts, including Dave. And they're great. They work on their own. They have lapel mic inputs. Yeah. They're really cool little devices. And so Dave and I were wondering like, oh, what's inside of it? And I found this photo, which I will link in of a...
For those who are wondering why I haven't torn it down yet is because they're actually glued together. Yeah. So you've got to like get the heat gun and kind of,
So we were just looking, we found some photos online of just PCBs. Also, this is the two. Yeah. So this is the Rode Wireless Go 2.
I think there's different
versions of that.
Yeah. The difference between the first version, which I had, I've now got the Wireless Go 2. I actually upgraded, is the first one was only one transmitter. So you only had a single mic and a single receiver. But the new Go 2 has two. So if you're interviewing someone, perfect. You put one on you, you put one on your guest. And the other cool thing about it is that it's actually built-in recording as well. Yeah. I think it's up to 8 or 12 hours actual recording internally. So you have that as a backup, just in case your wireless link went down or you had the wrong settings on the camera or something like that. Yep. You can actually pull the audio directly off the actual recorded thing that was clipped onto the person.
Because people who do audio and video are you've been burned enough times. And in fact, I'm actually recording locally now because I don't trust our current setup. So I have a local recorder running, as you do. You know, you make sure.
That reminds me, I should turn it on now. I should record as well.
Yeah, I recorded another one last night. I had our guest on to record. Yeah, it's just, you start to get really touchy,
So anyways, it's great. I love this thing because I have it in my little portable kit, my little portable camera kit that I take out, and you just whack it on people. I was at the ham radio thing with Dick Smith the other month, right? Yeah, and I was just like this little clip, like I didn't have to worry about like a cable and a belt pack and stuff like that. So as I was filming people who were talking, so we're going handing the mic from one person to the next, and it was just so easy. All you got to do is whack it straight on their collar. And
If you start looking, you're going to see this in YouTube videos everywhere because it is taking over. Because it's like instead of like, like a full battery pack, like the traditional lapel mics, like you might see like on stage where they need to have this huge battery. This thing is now just like tiny and you got to charge a lot more, but I think you get like 5-6 hours out of it.
Yep. No, it's great. Yeah. I think it's 8-hour battery life or something like that. Yeah. I've never run out of battery on it. So it's really low power stuff. Yep. So
Dave and I were looking at this board and we're like kind of just looking up parts that are on here. You know, the ones that you could tell from the big chips you look at first. And there's a big dialogue part on board, which I was just looking at, is the headphone amp. There's Then there's two other big chips. And
is that just the headphone amp or is that the... I haven't looked up that part yet. Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so.
The biggest part on the board is the headphone amp.
Oh, sorry. Oh, wait a second, Dave. Oh, wow. This is interesting. Oh, no, coprocessor for Bluetooth. I thought we were going to have a third chip. I'm already kind of giving away the game here. So it says single coprocessor platform
it's for a Bluetooth, smart
USB,
beat.
And analog.
It's the smart beat. Anyway, this is the Dialogue Semiconductor part. It's the DA14195 low power peripheral audio solution. Immerse yourself in audio. It offers USB, Bluetooth, analog.
It's a full microcontroller too. It's got codecs. Yep. It's got a whole Cortex M0 on it. So it's like it's a whole other system.
Yeah, it supports 192 kilohertz, 32-bit
beamforming. Six mics for beamforming. Oh, interesting.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah, okay. Well, I'm pretty sure it's only got a single mic in this thing. It's not like a multi mic array, I don't think.
So then, you know, following along, there's a huge F antenna on the one corner of the board where the QR code is. And again, we'll post photos here. Then it goes into an amplifier. That's pretty obvious, like basically a front end booster for that and maybe some antenna switching. And then there's a chip next to it. So I'm like, oh, that's got to be the Bluetooth chip, right? This thing's Bluetooth. We knew that.
Yep.
And I look at it and I'm like, okay, these numbers, it says NS2810. And I'm like, wait, NS? No, it actually just, I was reading it wrong. It's N52. N52810. So I'm like, oh, I know this is NRF52. Bingo. Like that's the low cost NRF52 part family. So that's Nordic. Doing all the Bluetooth processing. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Why don't you take it from here, Dave?
And I've got to pull up the data sheet. Here we go. Oh, right. And so you think, okay, this is right. Of course it's going to use a Nordic semiconductor, right? Because they're like leaders, aren't
very
they?
Kind of these days.
One of hugely popular. They have been for a long time, right? And it's got a ARM Cortex M4 processor in there, right? And you know, it's low power. It can run at 32 microamps per meg. You know, if you actually run from RAM, it's a bit higher. If you run from flash, ooh, an extra 2 microamps per megahertz. If you run it from flash instead of RAM, but you know. If you know, that could make all the difference. Anyway, it works down to 1.7 volts. Really good, right? It's got Bluetooth built in. So, right, it's pretty much all you need. So all you need is to do this wireless Go mic is this chip plus a front-end audio ADC DAC, right?
Codec type of thing.
Codec-y type thing, right? Yeah. So that's it. Right.
So what's the last chip on board?
You mentioned headphone before. It does not have a headphone jack on it. It's just purely a microphone and a transmitter.
Oh, that's a microphone input. Oh, yes. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Got it.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. We're looking at the receiver. Sorry. So the receiver does have. We're looking at the receiver, not the transmitter.
Yeah, because that's the other thing. So this is the receiver. So this has the far away person has a transmitter. Basically, we're looking at the receiver, and then that does have a headphone jack, quote unquote, output. But that's line level that goes into a camera.
It's line level out, which goes to your camera.
Yeah, so that's what the dialogue part's doing. Right. Yeah. So then there's one final one on there, which I thought was kind of, you know, like your brain starts to do this pattern matching stuff. And I'm like, oh, something 2833. And there's another NRF part called the 52833. But this is not that. I thought this might be like a repackaged thing. It's ATS2833. And sometimes tricky chip companies use S's instead of 5. So it could be that this was the S2833 or the 52833. And this thing actually, it turns out, looks like it's the brains of the operation to me.
Well, it could be, yes. So they may not be using that Nordic semiconductor part to do anything else but the Bluetooth receiving.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they could be like doing, you know, DSP error correction stuff in there as well. Right.
Yeah.
So that'd be actually, that just occurred to me. That'd be my guess, because when you're doing wireless audio transmitters like this, right, the difference between the cheap eBay crap brand ones you buy and the good, you know, the Sennheiser mics or the Rode mics, wireless solutions, right, the really top quality ones, is that the audio never drops out. Right. It either works or it either works, you know, it just works perfectly because they have lots of error correcting built in and everything else. Right. It's really, you know, rock solid. You want a rock solid audio, professional audio solution. So I reckon that's what the Nordic's doing. I reckon the Nordic is actually using its 32-bit ARM processor, but it's not doing the processing. It's probably not driving the screen and all that sort of stuff. Right. It's just doing audio. Transmit error correction and stuff like that.
Right. Well, the thing that was confusing to us when we were looking at this at the beginning was the fact that this ATS2833 is from SmartCores, never heard of them.
But yeah, it's they're listed a Chinese as a Bluetooth
chip as well. And then
this is basically
used.
The same as the Nordic part, but we don't see any antenna.
It looks like it's
got
a
Bluetooth
rip-off,
built in, right?
Yeah, right. It looks like this is a ripoff. This looks like a much beefier version on the NRF52833.
And it's actually a Bluetooth audio solution. It's a highly integrated single chip Bluetooth audio solution. So in theory, all you need for this is just this one ATS2833 SmartCores chip.
Yeah.
You don't need the Nordic. You don't need anything else except the codec, except the analog to digital.
Well, that was another thing I was thinking too, is that what if this is maybe a cost down for later, right? So you move the antenna over later and you test, you didn't get to testing at this at the first point, but then maybe as you have more firmware resources and more time on this thing, then it's like later you're like, oh, yeah, I could use this for Bluetooth as well.
Right. And it does noise reduction, wind noise reduction, echo cancellation, it does a ton of stuff built in. It's got bass enhancement. It's got virtual surround effects. It does cryptography as well. So you can encrypt your transmit solution.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, I think it's probably likely if you're not getting crosstalk as well. I mean,
you're not getting crosstalk with another. Well, that's probably what they're doing, right? Because you've got two transmitters, right? Mm-hmm. This comes standard with two transmitters and they're just randomly coded with a unique ID. So that no two transmitters are using the same encryption, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's what this – wow. Yeah. It's just, basically there are two complete Bluetooth solution chips on here. And it's like, well, why? But
yeah, it was confusing. Yeah.
Very confusing.
Also, I'd like to call out – this sounds like something
– This one has a –
no, before we – come on, man. I got something good here. This sounds like a Dave thing. I've never seen this on a data sheet before or a product page before. Typical sniff current.
Oh, where's this?
This is under power management. Typical sniff current, 600 microamps.
For which chip here?
Oh, for the SmartCores one.
Oh, the SmartCores. I don't have the data sheet. I've just got like a page.
Yeah.
I don't actually have the PDF.
No, it's the product page.
It is. Typical sniff current. Yes.
I've never seen sniff current. That sounds like a Dave
sniff
term.
Sniff current. It sings, sounds like Chinglish. Yeah. Typical sniff current. That's great.
Yep.
That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yep. Yeah. Anyway, that's and it's got this actually has a built-in 24-bit Delta Sigma DAC. So it's actually got the DAC which is driving the line out.
You think this is driving the line out? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so this one does. So what does the other chip do? What does the dialogue do then?
I don't know. It doesn't make sense. I mean, like geographically, the dialogue is much further from the headphone jack the outline out jack. So
we've got no less than three 32-bit
chips that look like they
Cortex
could all do this. Yeah.
Processors that can all do what?
An abundance of processing power.
What?
Yeah.
This is probably an example of where they've simply throwing an ARM Cortex, a 32-bit ARM Cortex at every little module they can.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, just
because
they can.
I mean, they're in Australia. Just go knock on their door, Dave. Could you just go and ask them about what's going on here?
Yeah, well, I can.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
obviously, they're not going to give us their trade secrets, but they haven't. It isn't like they potted this thing, right? You can just open it up and you can see it, but my goodness.
And there's definitely going to be also RANs as well because this is a popular product. So there's going to be other things like this. Yeah.
Other products? Is there?
Yeah, I've like other knockoffs and stuff.
I've never seen a competing product to the Rode Go mic.
Oh, nothing
maybe there is.
Yet.
I don't know. I mean, leave it in the comments.
Yeah.
But Rode own this market of this little portable clip-on, transmitter and receiver with built-in recording now with the second model, and it's just Anyway, where are they storing? Where's all the memory? Is it on the other side of the board? Because
there's nothing on the other side of the board. There's a photo.
You remember I mentioned this thing has like all this recording, right? So
it's
maybe that's
board,
what
Dave.
They're using.
One-sided board.
It's only single-sided load, is it?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So which one has the most memory? Because that will be the one where they're doing the audio recording.
Yeah. I think the 50 the S ATS 2833.
Okay, 192K of flash for the Nordic.
So wait a second. I thought this thing. So this thing is Bluetooth. I thought the transceivers. Sorry, I thought the transmitters or the things that are on the people far away. I thought they talked to the receiver, and then the receiver could talk to a phone or a thing. Because there's another thing that looks like an antenna on here too. If you look on the zoomed out photo, I know that we're killing people here that aren't listening.
Yep.
if you look at the back photo, right, and you see there's like a small flex cable, that looks like it's like a low frequency receiver there.
Oh, I'm not. Oh, it's, okay. Yes. Right.
On the other corner from the antenna.
It's got
a,
yes, it's corner and it's got RF on it. Yep. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. So is it?
Maybe it's a, well, is it some sort of dual diversity thing or is it?
I don't know.
You think, no, I don't think, no, because the
I'm asking just how the things work. I thought the transmitters, the things that are on the people that are far away, I thought they just talked back to the receiver. I didn't think everything talked to like a phone. I thought it was like everything talks to the receiver
doesn't.
And the receiver
just,
talks
no,
to
no.
a phone.
No, no, as far as I know, you can't use these with your phone. If you want to program the, if you want to program them, you have to plug it in via the USB as far as I'm aware.
Huh. So what the heck is
because
that?
Because you have an app on
the
your
battery
PC clip, and that and you plug it into the USB and then it talks to it and you can set up, you know, you can set up the input gain and stuff like that. Right. Mm-hmm. And you can set up other stuff. How it actually records, does it record to a WAV file or whatever, you know?
Dave, I'm stumped.
As far as I know, the receiver would not transmit back to the transmitters. As far as I know, it's only one way.
Oh no, yeah, I didn't mean that way. I meant to a phone. I thought the is kind of confusing too. I thought
maybe
the person
is,
out
think
far away from the camera was transmitting to the thing on top of the camera, the receiver, and then the receiver could also transmit to a phone. That's what I thought was working. Maybe
maybe it is. I've never used it in that regard.
Yeah.
I've only ever used it as a line out thing which goes to my camera. But maybe that's
On the Wireless Go product page. Series 4, 2.4 gigahertz digital transmission, 128-bit encryption. There you go.
There you go. So it does, right, yes. Yeah. Yes, it does the encryption, yeah.
Okay. Onboard recording, option
200 meters,
channel
line
separately.
Of sight,
yep. Up
so we were right about that. Each, when it comes out of the factory, because you don't set up channels on these things, right?
Yeah.
There's no ability to do that. So each one comes factory program with its own unique encryption out of the box. So in theory, you know, 128 bits, you won't ever find. You'd be pretty unlucky to find another, transmitter that had the same code as yours. So, wow.
Yeah, and they're not using, it's not Bluetooth either then. That means they're just using the 2.4 gigahertz radio.
Hmm.
Did they not say Bluetooth on here? Let's see. Control F, Bluetooth.
It doesn't say anything about USB out to a phone.
It says USB-C.
Yeah, USB. Yeah, that's how you set it up. Oh, so maybe it does actually work as a USB-C, but that doesn't explain that second antenna. You're right.
We're not getting it, Dave.
if we just spent half an hour analyzing this before we actually started the show, we would have come up with them.
Yeah.
As far as
I'm
aware,
the teardown of the transmitter right now, though, too. I feel like it would be like
right.
Like a, downsampled version. Maybe it's like a less populated version of the same board. That would be smart, but maybe it's not. You know what's really bad is if some of the engineers are listening right now.
Right. Yeah,
tearing,
I know. They're just
tearing
they're
their hair them. Out.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. There's a solution. Come and tell us all your secrets and we'll be fine.
But to have three ARM Cortex 32-bit processors on this thing.
Y'all use a lot of microcontroller power.
They're just throwing it around. But I can understand differentiating them between two because one of them, as I said, has to be dedicated to – one of them's got to drive the screen and do the user interface, right?
Sure.
So it's got to do the screen live updating. And then it's also got to do – one of them's got to do the actual real-time recording as well. Right, because it actually records. It's got to record both channels, both receivers at the same time, and record it to a WAV file continuously. And
I bet the do you see the small push button not by the battery, but the other side by the headphone by the output jack? I think that might be the flash. It's an 8-pin, maybe like a spy flash.
Oh, okay. You think it's
there's another one too?
Jobbing.
GD, the GDLSC8.
Oh, yeah, I see that. They're just so small these days.
It's like I was expecting to see like Flash to be big, but it, you know, silicon's always the same. You know, like,
especially memory is just, you know.
Yeah.
So they could have a serial. Yeah. Could have a serial flash. Yeah.
I do enjoy macro shots like this. This is nice.
Yeah. It's great.
Nice job, submitter. Yeah. Possibilis.
Single sided load too matters.
Yeah.
You know, it still matters. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. For like cost and.
Yeah. Just simplicity. Cost and simplicity at the production stage because they're made here in Australia.
You know, they make it in Australia. Maybe they only have like a hot plate.
Right. You think they just have some amateur setup.
Right. Just a lot of hot plates, you know.
I would love to know what volume they do these in because it's pretty much, as we said, it's like the de facto standard wireless mic for video, you know, people making YouTube videos and whatnot.
Yeah.
These days, it's just everyone's got one because it's so great.
Maker Moco, I think that's who it is. Mm. Yeah. Maker Moco.
But it's more than the hardware. All the magic's in the software, right?
Yes.
And in fact, I mentioned this the other day. I probably mentioned it in my video too. Rode have one of the best. This is not sponsored by Rode, by the way. They're just they make cool stuff, right? And they happen to be Australian too. So, you know, there's that.
And
my mate Doug Ford, if you haven't seen it, he used to be the head designer at Rode Mics back then when they only did microphones, and now they do, you know, more than that, a heck of a lot more than that. Yeah. So, well, I guess this is a microphone solution. It's just a wireless solution, but they do a ton of.
Yeah, I mean, you mean like stuff. He did analog microphone. He did like traditional
analog mics. Anyway, so
did you miss what I was saying before? Have you ever seen Maker Moco? I hope I'm saying it right.
No, what's a Maker Moco?
Is a YouTuber.
Is it a person? A thing? Oh,
yes, it's a YouTuber. but he has a setup where, like, it's got this. We were talking. I mentioned hot plates, but it's like it looks like it's like a lead screw kind of thing, and the whole thing like kind of settles down onto a hot plate. I don't know how to explain it. If you go to like his most recent video, I'll link it to you. You can watch it. See if I can find the thing. But it's like a hot plate. Hot plate assembly. It's super cool to watch. I mean, does great videos in general too, but
Cool.
I'd like to get something like that, but you know, like I'm not doing a lot
you
of
don't you don't do enough to warrant it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
No,
but I love watching his videos assembling. It's really great. Yeah. it's like basically if you have that kind of setup too, like it's a reason to go and design like that, you know.
The pick and place thing is still not happened for me. That was available in Canberra. It and the guy actually had it up for sale, and then I wanted it, and then he took it down. He decided to keep it. Well, it's come up for sale again, and nobody wants it. It's like I think I can practically get it for free at this stage.
There you go.
But it's like this obscure brand which nobody uses, and it's just buying trouble, right? And it's not. Yeah. And if I make videos on it, I'm not helping anyone. Because nobody would use this thing. So the videos, you know, I'm better, like if I'm going to make videos showing you how to use a pick and place machine, I'm better off just getting one that at least you can buy, you know.
It just makes you wonder how many are on the continent though too, you know, like in terms of like traditional, I guess not even traditional.
There's
like,
another,
you know,
one
like
that came up, it's a Yamaha or whatever, but I don't have the space for that. Like I've got to have a big roller door to bring the thing in and three-phase power and, you know.
I'm not sure it's that useful though either. Like if you get like a high-end one that other people aren't going to get, like nobody,
if you go and make a bunch
of videos about that, nobody's doing that, you know what I mean?
Nobody's
doing
that.
It's almost better
if you
did like a low-end one and how to optimize it for
either an open pick and place or a, you know, or something else, or one of the new Y1 from Neodyn or whatever, you know, so I know. It's just all too hard. And then I thought, you know, look, for my new product that I'm working on at the moment, I can, you know, I can get a pick and place machine for that and start manufacturing myself. And then I realized, well, this new product's actually not going to have that much on it. It's got one chip and a few miscellaneous parts.
It's
There's not much.
Artisanal resistor.
The artisanal resistors.
Yeah, hand wound by Dave.
Like it's so simple. I'm actually thinking of selling it as a kit. You know, as in just make it yourself because it's so easy to.
If you sell it as a kit, I forget who told me about this. Someone who sold as a kit, they said like you have to like put a thing in there about solder. Like if people like get it, they don't know how to solder. It's like,
and then, oh yeah, like, no, say, oh, I have sold kits before. Work. I trust me, I know. Yeah. What the deal is.
Oh, yes, maybe I heard from you then. Yeah.
I've had stuff returned. This is before the days of the internet. They'd post it back to me with extensive letters, and I've checked every single component on this. I've triple checked every single component. Your design is bad. And then I take one. I stare at the board for 2 seconds, and I go, "Your regulator's in backwards, dude."
Yeah.
You know, like it's classic. Just, yeah. Classic. Like, no wonder it doesn't work.
Yep. Hey, so I sent you that video of the timestamp. You can go watch that if you want to discuss. If not, no big deal. Great channel though. Highly recommend it. I will link it in the output or in the output thing as well.
It lowers on a bunch of grub screws.
Yeah. Isn't that great? Yeah, it's like Z, what are they called? Ball screws? You call them ball?
We're ball screws or whatever. Yeah, they're called. Yeah. So there's two.
Yeah, it looks like a custom thing, right?
Yeah, it's like a custom hot plate, and then it lowers the board. The whole idea of the two worm screw things on the side, you could preheat the element.
I think that's why.
Right. Yes. So you can leave the element on, and then it lowers the board down onto the hot plate, leaves it there until it does it, and then leave it there for extra seconds.
It's on its own plate, so it's like a separate plate, and then there's the element below it, and then the plate.
And then it lifts it back up. Then it automatically lifts the board back up.
Yeah.
That's actually
It's pretty clever. Yeah.
It's not bad. I don't mind that at all. Because otherwise,
I tried to contact Maker Mocha before. If anyone knows, this person, I'd love to talk to them, but no responses. So
this is the hot plate equivalent of a conveyor oven.
Yeah, it's like an automated hot plate. Yeah, versus like,
yeah. Because if you don't know how a normal reflow machine works, it's a conveyor belt. Your board comes out of your pick and place machine. It goes on the conveyor belt, and then it goes through the oven, which usually has 5 different stages of heating. But anyway, it goes through, and then it comes out the other end. And then it's super hot when it comes out, but it's all timed perfectly so that it's, whereas you can't do that with a hot plate. You've got to physically put it on the hot plate, then you've got to physically take it off. So this is a way to do that, but just in an automated way by lowering it down on these, on this plate that comes down to hook onto the hot plate. That's really cool. Anyway.
It's very clever.
Yeah. I like it. Anyway, he's doing this little robot. This is really cool. Yep.
Yeah.
Make a Moku. Awesome.
Yeah, they did a GPS LoRa tracker thing in the past as well. Just like really great, high quality videos and very in-depth ESP32 designs. So I'm very impressed.
Yeah, that is very impressive. Yep. Yeah. It's a PCB robot, basically. It's a, motors are on the board and attaches to these, what are these multi-axis wheels? The wheels that can go in any direction.
Omni-wheel. James Bruton uses those in a bunch of products too.
Right. Very cool. Anyway, I like that. That is awesome. That's great.
Dave, I'd like to discuss my sins and what I may have made.
What have you done this time?
I know. Okay. Here is a question. Is it bad of me? I'm making a one or two of design, just like a one-off.
Right. Yeah.
And I went on Amazon and I'm like, I have 3 conductors. I needed to make like a panel pass through. And I was like, I have 3 conductors. Show me what you got, Amazon. And I was like, ooh, that one's nice. So what I may have done is I may have created something that looks like some other standard could plug into it, but it's just for me. Or indifferent. You be the judge.
Okay. Send me a link.
Oh, yes, I should probably have that up. Yeah.
Actually,
that's the thing. I don't even know what it is. Like, it's that like low risk for me. Like, I don't know what this vendor is. It's literally like, I looked at this thing and I'm like, I need a connector. And it could be like, someone's going to be like, oh, I could go and plug a standard flibbity flobbity into that thing,
A flibbity flobbity.
Whatever the standard might be, I obviously don't know what that standard is.
Okay, I'm having a look now.
Yeah.
So you're just using a 3-pin metal.
I don't know what it is. Yeah, it's got like a.
It's a microphone.
Is it DIN?
It's a DINY microphone.
AV8 Well, according to Amazon.
Yeah. This would be like you'd use in like a, some sort of cheap microphone interface, something like that.
Yeah, it kind of looks like that. And so that was like another option. It was like, oh, you could use a XLR style connector, which would be too big for what I need. But like, you know, I've seen XLR, which is like a true microphone, a balanced input kind of thing. I've seen those abused before. And they make those with more than you standard. And for microphones, there's three pins. You know, they make 4-pin, 5-pin, whatever, all the way up.
No, this is just a regular 3-pin DIN, I think. This is just...
DIN? Is this DIN?
DIN. Yeah, DIN. A DIN connector.
How do you
connector.
Define DIN in this way?
DIN is a circular connector. I don't DIN actually circular. Know the origin of the term. But if you search for probably, a 3-pin DIN connector...
Probably something with Deutsche Industrial... Something like that. Like DIN rail was that actually is DIN. In DIN rail. Yeah. I know that the DIN in DIN rail is Deutsche something because it's German. Yeah.
And then you've got the mini version of that, which is a mini DIN, which is used for the PS2 keyboard. You know the PS2 keyboard interface or something. That's a five pin.
Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. 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 And that's gotten bastardized before too. That's also what kind of looks like the MIDI. The MIDI connector also kind of looks like that too. It's got six or seven, I think.
Yeah. It's a DIN, isn't it? The MIDI? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
but congratulations, you've stepped into the 1970s.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
This is like, this was the standard connector in the 1970s.
I just want a cable that's not going to rip out the bottom of my thing that I'm trying to make. You know, I'm trying to make a cable assembly that it won't rip out. And
granted, you are using the screw lock in DIN. Rather than just the friction fit DIN.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's the thing I don't want it to rip out.
That is a step up. So.
Yeah. Oh, that's the fancier version?
Oh, yeah. Fancy pantsy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. This is $4 per pair on Amazon, so.
When I was a boy. No. Jeez.
I mean, that's the thing. I'm buying two, though, at a time. You buy two at a time, you're going to pay whatever price is. Right. And basically on Amazon, you can't get anything less than like $7 because I think less than that, it's not worth it for them to actually put it on the shelves at Amazon because they take so much. But yeah. So that's what happens when you're doing last minute engineering like I am. But okay, so I haven't sinned, but it's I'm not going to win any design awards. Is that what I'm hearing?
So the title of today's show is Chris Discovers DIN Connectors. Oh my goodness!
Discovering the 70s, one part at a time. Yeah,
I thought it was something obscure, like you hyped it up like it was.
I don't know what it is though. You know, like I'm like a I'm a millennial discovering this magical new technology.
This
Dave, I have this magical machine. It goes back and forth, and it goes up a little one level at a time, and it squirts plastic out. It's called a 3D printer. Have you ever heard of these? Yeah.
Oh goodness! Next thing you know, you'll be using DB25s and.
Yeah. I mean, you can get those populated, I guess. I mean, that's the thing, though. Like, what I really mean is I've seen connectors bastardized before, right? Like, employer I used to work for had a RJ45 connector that was definitely not Ethernet, you know? And, you know, you could say that RJ45 technically wasn't what Ethernet started with, but I'd say these days it is standard to be Ethernet. And that's confusing to me. And other times I've seen other connectors where it's like, don't plug that other thing into here because it won't work. You know, like that sort of thing. And sometimes you're just looking for a connector though, you know?
Should engineers be scolded over non-standard use of a connector on your product? Like, you know, because you see this all the time. You think that, oh, this is an RJ45. Right, it must be an Ethernet. Right. And you plug it in. No, it's some custom bloody... interface.
It's just because that's the thing too, is because the commoditization of high volume things like Ethernet basically drives the price down. Where people are like, oh, that's a good price for a connector.
And it's a standard connector. You can buy the cables and you can, you don't have to make your own custom cables.
So that's problematic, but I guess maybe we should just put warning labels next to these things of like not Ethernet or not.
It's all in the labeling, but it's got to be like nice big bold font, I think it's perfectly adequate. I like, I've done it a million times. I can't be judgmental,
Because the other option I feel like is to like go and get a custom cable made, right? Like,
yeah, maybe get custom a custom housing. Cable and a custom connector, and yeah. there's somebody's been right. involved in custom connector design. It's you know, the major manufacturers, you can go to Amphenol and say, you know, please build me a custom connector. Yes, sir. Yeah. No problems. Yeah. And I'll charge you for it.
I'm sure I'm sure your quantities are up in the millions, sir, right? If not, we have a standard NRE.
Yep. Oh, somebody posted this. Oh, where is it? I'm going to have to find it now. Oh, my God. I retweeted it the other day. It was this connector. It was the, I can't remember what brand it was. I'm going to find it. So you keep talking and I'll find it. It was a modular connector. It was like, you can actually design your own, like you get a standard big outer shell, right? It's designed for like a huge cable, right? And then you can plug and play your own little, you know, oh, I want a 4-pin Molex in there. Oh, I want some fiber. Oh, I want some big high voltage power.
Was it like for like water resistance? That was like the shell piece, like the keeping it like IP
this
rated?
This one's not really waterproof, I don't think. It's just like, if you need, you know, if you've got some big industrial bit of kit or you've got some spacecraft or something, you want to interconnect all these cables and you've got
I've seen that before with like even, you know, they have a 25-pin DIN, you know, something that's massive on its own. And then it gets like outer molded basically with plastic or something in order to IP rate it. But it's like, well, we needed to make the standard cable or we already knew how to use these other types of cables. And then internal in the shell, it's a, some standard thing that you'd expect to see unshielded, unprotected, whatever. It's just being reused a bunch.
Right. Well, I'm having no luck finding it. So anyway, there are companies that make these modular connectors and you can pick and choose your own things to plug into them. So very impressive stuff.
Yep.
But, you know, there's a thing on Cursed Connectors on Twitter, I think it is.
Oh, yeah. I've seen Cursed Data Sheets. I haven't seen Cursed Connectors, but.
Cursed Connectors is, I think, a, yeah. Okay. I think they just publish photos just like weird ass connectors.
Yeah, Cursed Connectors. I feel like we could set the Midjourney on that one as well.
Oh, right. Yes, we could. Yeah, we could let that rip. Yeah. Maybe we could do a the thumbnail for this one will be a Midjourney. Which one of us can produce the best Midjourney cursed connector? But it's going to come out all mongy, arty looking. It's not going to be realistic. So, I hate that. Anyway, bloody connectors. Yeah, age old problem, you know. And do you, that's the thing. Like if you've got you're building an industrial bit of kit, right? Big industrial machine or something like that. Do you have, 20 million cables? Do you try and feed them all through the one connector? Do you have 20 different connectors? And then you bundle all the cables together and you cable tie them all together and then they come out like a big octopus lead, with the 10 different connectors. Right. Or, age old problem. Anyway.
I am staring at a particularly heinous connector right now, which I'm not allowed to speak ill of CAN anymore.
The connector because you had it all explained to you.
I did. It was fantastic. I enjoyed that a lot of it. But the connector's still beefy as hell, I'm sure, I have a CAN reader and I have a CAN simulator. And I've yet to get the guts to go and plug this into my wife's car, the reader. And I know it will be fine. It'll be fine. But like, I haven't figured it out. Although I don't know if I mentioned on the show, one time I was cleaning up the floor mats in my wife's car because I got rid of my car when I moved to Chicago. And so I don't have a car. And so I was cleaning up the floor mats and I like looked up and there was an LED on. And I'm like, what is going on here?
I thought you said.
Did we talk about this?
Sorry, but I thought you said floor mats, and then I realized you're saying floor
mats,
floor with an L.
Floor mats.
It's like solder. It's like solder. You're dropping that L there.
No, that's just me not speaking clearly. Yeah, I normally say floor mats. Yeah. Anyways,
right. Okay.
And so there's an LED on, and I'm like, what is this thing? And then I went and I pulled this thing out, and there was. And I was like, what is going on right now? I open it up and there's a cell modem in there and it was plugged into our OBD2. And I'm like,
what? Is this like a tracker or something?
Is someone tracking this car? And it turned out it was like she had gotten one of those insurance trackers, basically. So like there's this whole thing where like in the US, at least, I'm not sure in Australia, but in the US, if you plug in a... What's that?
I've never heard of an insurance tracker.
So insurance companies now in the US...
I can see where it's going. So they pay you
money.
Get a lower premium, lower premium if they know where you are.
Not if they know where you are, but if they know, they need to be able to send the data back to the servers, but they measure acceleration, they read off the speed.
Oh, if you're erratic, measure, your driver or something, and then your premium goes up if you're a crazy driver.
Well, they say it in the other direction, but yeah, I think that is true, actually. So it's
I'm sure that's
we'll give you a lower rate as long as you're safe, but then I think it's like, you know, it is punitive if they see you're a nutso driver.
Wow. But, okay.
Yeah, it's creepy.
I'm not aware of that here. I don't think
it's a thing.
Wow. Yeah.
It's and the thing is she had stopped using it. So she had switched insurance companies, but the thing was still plugged in. So it was still transmitting. I was like, oh my God.
They're still getting the data.
So creepy.
Rip that out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It creeped me the hell out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now I make those things.
So it's gone, right? You actually ripped it out. Tear down. Yeah. Do a tear down video.
I think I threw it away because I was creeped out.
Oh,
yeah.
you
know the other thing too? No, I know it was actually okay at that point because it was, I looked up the modem and it was a 3G modem and those got sunset.
Oh, right. So you guys don't have
technology obsolescence.
3G there anymore?
You don't either, Dave. Nobody has 3G anymore. No.
No, Australia still has 3G.
Nope.
I think it's being phased out, but.
Let's see. 3G Australia. At least everyone in the US,
the 9th of May. Vodafone will shut its remaining 3G servers off. 3G services off. Okay.
Oh, so maybe this year.
Telstra will follow in June 2024. So it's still a thing here.
Oh, it's still a thing there. Okay.
And Optus will be going until September 2024. Yeah.
The US, I think AT&T was the last one. Yeah.
All right.
So AT&T shut down in late February. So, we've definitely been like on the edge. And the reason is because they're repurposing the spectrum for 5G, right? So
to use it for higher bandwidth, stuff like that, and
different protocols. 2G is still available in some parts of the world. I think the US, it's mostly shut down as well. But like basically it's a bad time if you have 2G, 3G things out in the world.
Yeah.
Hopefully you got the notice a long time ago because that stuff is starting to go the way of the
dodo. See, I would not have noticed that because I've got, I think the only 3G thing I've got that transmits back is my home solar thing, which if it didn't fail, because I've done a video on where it actually failed inside, like it actually failed, which is I think the first one ever to fail or something. Trust me, trust it to happen to me. Right.
Sure,
anyway, it's this Australian product that monitors my solar, and it transmits. Got a little SIM card in it. Transmits back on 3G. You know, I've got one of the earliest 3G models, which just after I got it, apparently they started doing the 4G ones because they knew the 3G would eventually get shut down.
Yeah, that's the thing, right?
And
exactly.
it would have just stopped working. You know, it would have just like, yeah, bam. Yeah. So anyway, now I have a 4G one installed, so it's not a problem, but. Yeah, that's something that would have just stopped working and I probably wouldn't have noticed. I don't know. Or maybe they would have sent me an email saying, you know, we have you on record as having a 3G.
Time to buy a new one, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm guessing some of the support requests on that are like people being like, I looked at my stuff and nothing's transmitting anymore. Where's my data? Yeah. Do you still use that often? Do you find yourself using that a lot?
No, only when I need to, but it's there, right? Yeah. So the data's and it's all on the network, so it's all, you know, the data's all there. So I can pull up like a 12-month graph, you know, something like that. Yep.
Yeah, that's nice.
So I don't use it on a daily basis. It's just...
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm sure it's like one of those things where like you check it every day when you're getting started, like because you're excited about it.
Yeah, it's a thing because you're excited to know how much your solar system produces. And then you might use it in winter time to check, you know, how much Then after that, after, you know, the first year, it just becomes a thing that you might use occasionally to pull some long-term data from.
That makes sense. Yep. Yep.
But it has to be there, right? It has to be transmitted.
Totally.
And
Yep.
Yep. Anyway, my other system failed because I changed shoe phones, right? So I got a new, well, a new second because I'm a tight ass. Got a secondhand shoe phone, right? And it's got
shoe phone is your reference to your smartphone?
Mobile smartphone. Yeah, yeah, they're called shoe phones. Yeah.
Yeah, like that's a what a Maxwell Smart reference.
Maxwell Smart, get smart. Yes.
There
correct.
You go. Yep. Yep.
I won't yep. laugh at you.
Yeah,
now.
Steve Carell, right? you know, come on, man. Just making a joke. Just making a joke. Yeah.
Them's fighting words.
Yeah. Them's millennial words.
Yeah, right. And and I've got an older, because I've got multiple solar systems, I've got an older one, which I have to connect with Bluetooth. Then I've got to use a third-party app on my stupid shoe phone, which then I've got to periodically, like every month or something, I've got to like download all the data via Bluetooth, like log data in the solar, in the inverter. So I download all the log data and then it uploads it to pvoutput.org, which is a second system that I use for long-term monitoring.
And, like a, that's like open source or that's like a
PV. No, it's a, no, I don't think it's open source.
Okay. All right.
Anyway. And yeah, it's my new shoe phone just doesn't work. It just doesn't, the app just doesn't work on my new shoe phone. So I haven't got data for months. So I just haven't been bothered to, well, I've tried to solve it and I can't. So it's like, yeah, it did that system now doesn't work because I don't have the freaking app that works.
Right.
You know, it's right. like, oh God. Yep. Anyway, actually I might, that's what I might do. I still got my old shoe phone that I replaced. I might actually take that home. And just use that every month. I just turn on every month and use it as a portal.
Yeah, I mean, if you can do Wi-Fi, right? You don't need a SIM card in there.
Yeah, no, I don't need a SIM card. Yeah. No, I can just I can just turn it on and keep it charged up and every month. Yeah, I'll do that. Damn it!
All right,
that's yeah.
Dave has decided.
Why didn't I think of that? Anyway,
I have spoken.
Oh boy. Anyway.
Yeah. Speaking of things off in the future, and I guess topical, but not really a big deal and not surprising at all, Autodesk has officially...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Gonski.
Yep, 20, but not June 2026.
Eagle is Gonski. Eagle.
Sorry, yes.
Eagle has flown the coop.
That's right.
Yep. Yes.
It's
thanks for all the fish. Though. Yep.
Yes.
Yep. I mean, like it's fish. Not going to be until, like, it's not for another couple of years, right?
That's
but,
right. Yep.
But they have announced it, which means don't bother using it anymore. Basically, just you know, like change
I think
with, now.
I mean, they're trying. This is in line with what we expected, right? They're investing all their time this in Fusion 360, Fusion Electronics, I suppose. Definitely,
which is a spin-off
platform.
Of Eagle from a code from the PCB module in Fusion is actually Eagle, right? That's where it came. That's where the code
the
base came from.
Was yeah, I don't think the code base. I think the design and stuff like that. I think it was a bottom up rewrite.
Oh really?
I don't think they used. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't think they used any Eagle code, really? Why?
I'm talking
you?
Out of my butt. I don't really know, but the Eagle anyway. Code is really old, really, really, really old. So I that would be tough to make that smush together. I'm guessing. You know, it's end of an era, but also I think it's really just. An inevitability given the fact that they were bought by Autodesk. Like this is
exactly
what happened. So
Autodesk don't want a hobby solution. That isn't their business, right?
That's right. Right.
Yeah, totally.
So good luck. I think it's great.
And technically, unless you've got an older perpetual license version,
that's right.
You're screwed, right? Because it simply will stop working, right?
Yeah, because I think the thing is they're going to stop selling licenses to it. So like that's really how they kill it.
Yeah,
right?
But it's
you can't buy
but it's
it. You
a
can't
phone
buy
back to
updates.
The server to enable thing, isn't it? If you're on the monthly thing, if you're on the subscription, isn't it? It will simply stop working if it can't talk to the server, right?
I think so. I'm not sure.
So I think it's going to stop. There is an older
time, so.
Perpetual version, you paid for it. But then 6 months after they bought it, once again, which everyone predicted they would go to a subscription model. Yes. So if you bought into the subscription model and you don't have that perpetual version, then you're screwed, I think. I think it will actually stop working.
Yep.
Yep. So, ouch.
Yeah, and this is not new news either. No. We haven't recorded in a while.
Yeah. No. And the obvious question is, well, why don't they just make it free? You know, they why don't they just give it to the world? You know, it's because, well, you know, that.
I think they bought the, you know, like they bought the user group as well. They're trying to, I think they're trying, I mean, like, you know, to their credit, they're trying to gently nudge people, right? They're trying to say, hey, look, this is
They want to transition people to the paid solution. That's why they won't give it away for free. They won't go, okay, we're going to convert it back to a perpetual version. Here is the final release. Here it is. Give it to the world for free, because then no one would buy Fusion 360.
Or I think that's right. Yeah, I think they're trying to make people decide. Yeah. And I think they bought this group and they're trying to make the group there, and they've decided at some point it's not worth supporting that anymore. And it's a decision. It's fine. Mm. Like I said,
maybe in 10 years time or something, because that's what Altium did. Altium, 20 years later, they went, here's the DOS version for free. You can have it. It's free. Go for it. You know.
Got it. Yeah. Right. They get enough irate calls from the graybeards and they're like,
right.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Go on, get. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. So it's free. So technically you can get Altium for free. It's just the old DOS version. Which is great.
Some people prefer it that way,
goodness.
Dave.
Yeah. Number of boards I've done in that old DOS version, you know. That was the duck's guts. Yep. Auto tracks. 1.61 was the last final version. I still remember it fondly.
Yep, yep.
Or if you were anyone, you had the 1.61 ND, which was the no dongle version, because it was hardware dongled.
Oh, I see. Got it. Yeah. ND, right. Yep.
And then they did actually release an official no dongle version, because some clients from the military or something said, hey, we can't have these dongle things. So, so they made a no dongle version, and then it spread around.
As it does.
Like wildfire. Does. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yep. So everyone had a copy of 1.61 ND. It's great.
Got it.
Those were the days. Anyway, can we also talk about old school? Speaking of old school.
Sure. What do we got?
They don't make PCBs like this anymore. I added the link just before the show, but I'll send it to you right now. Here you go.
I got it. I see it. Holy moly. Yeah. No, they do not. This looks like this is a store. This looks like this is a tray that you've pulled out of a drawer, and it's just got all of your chips on it.
Yeah. Oh, but this was so common back in the day. Let me explain.
I don't miss this era, Dave. Yeah.
Let me explain what we're looking at. We're looking at a board that's probably a couple of feet long, right?
Yeah,
it's probably at least, 800 millimeters deep by 500 millimeters wide or something, right?
Yeah, something
so it's like half a square meter board or something. Right, it's absolutely enormous, and every single square centimeter of this thing is filled with a DIP chip.
Yeah, and there's edge connectors. It looks like this whole thing slotted into a
server rack, and it's got the flippy things at the front. Yeah, so it's slotted into a huge deep rack. The card edge flippers. So have a look at the top.
Yeah,
the card edge locks. Yeah,
you're right. Yeah. Okay.
Right. And so that's what we're looking at here. Is it's just absolutely chocker.
Dave, is your smart fridge chirping at you? Is that what I'm hearing?
That's my shoe phone. That's my bloody shoe phone.
Your shoe phone. Yeah. Man, doesn't even turn off the shoe phone.
Calling. It's probably Mrs. Oh, no, it's telling me to record the amp hour. No, hang on.
Dave's got the wrong time zone. He's got the wrong time zone on his phone.
No, it's somebody called me. Hang on. We'll find. Oh yeah, it's Mrs. E Vlog. Yes. I don't think she knows we're actually recording this morning. So
that makes sense. Yeah. The missus here also. I didn't tell her.
Right.
Got in a little trouble for that one.
Anyway, my favorite thing on this, just from the
photos, is the last photo. Did you see that one?
Oh, hang on. Last photo. Let me scroll through.
This is
last
gorgeous.
Photo. Oh, the backside. Yes, I actually posted this on Twitter. It's the backside.
Oh my God, this is amazing.
It's the silk screen because they don't. Yeah, it's the silk screens on the bottom because they don't have room to put the silk screen on the top because all the chips are bundled up against each other.
What I'm really imagining is the intern that has to lay on his back underneath the board while you're debugging and be like, four up, three to the right. And it's like,
been there, done that.
402.
Been there, done that, dude.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah, because there was no room.
The paper next to it. Yeah.
This is how it was done back in the day. You did not have room on the top to put the silkscreen designators because you had to jam everything in.
the point one in the point one mic or the one microfarad, like the yellow caps just on the end of all of these things, the exact same cap everywhere, the through hole ones. Oh man. I don't miss this era at all.
And they're all in rows. They're all horizontal because that's how you routed these things. There are routing optimized two layer or, you know, four layer, six layer, eight layer routing algorithms that are optimized for all the traces going one direction on one side of the board, and they all go on one direction on the other side of the board, because you don't want to go like, you know, diagonal across the board or something like that. Then you wipe out all your routing room, right?
We live in a society, Dave.
and there's not a single bodge wire on it.
I mean,
I don't see a single bodge wire.
Maybe they snaked one. There's actually a pretty solid layer of dust, which is another good sign. It's great.
I would so want to buy it. I would love to buy this. It's currently on eBay, but it's it's listed as scrap for $300 or something. Yeah.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
What is this? Intergraph Corporation Vintage Intergraph, Board Silver
It's
scrap.
A graphics server or something. I think it's some sort of, yeah. Yep.
This era of computing I've actually got boards
like this. I'm staring at them right now. I've actually shown them on my blog before. I've torn down many old school items like this. Yeah, and just giant racks of dip chips. And they're all socketed too.
Socketed, I was going to say. They are all socketed, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
not just the ones with that you're taking out the program.
Ooh, evil. Ugh. Single wipe sockets. Not even dual wipe, let alone machine pin.
Single wipe is the mechanical.
Single wipe is the contact. The contact is only on one side of the socket, whereas dual wipe, you'll have a spring contact with contacts on both sides. So when you put the chip in.
So if the corrosion happens, you get a little more chance.
You've got more chance of it being on, because it's on two sides.
Yeah, maybe that clears the it's using so much current, it just clears the short itself. What are the yellow ones, the yellow 16-pin dips? And
they would be resistor networks. Dude.
Oh, really?
Oh, you young whippersnapper. No.
There's I figured the little ones were, the thin ones were resistor networks, but there's some that are socketed.
The thin ones are usually usually the pull-up packages, but the dip ones, the dip version, they're actually usually the individual resistors in there. Hmm. So there's like eight of them in a...
For like op amps though, or like for what kind of purpose?
16-pin dip. You could use them for series termination resistors, stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
You can use them.
Sense.
Yeah, just anything.
Oof. Yeah, this gives me a little anxiety looking at this, to be honest. I wouldn't have made it in this era, Dave. Making it in the current era either. I'm not sure, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wonder about that. Like, you know, I do wonder if I just kind of squeaked through university and stuff like that. Like I just happened to make it through. Like I think about like 30 years prior, right? Where it was like, you know, all physics and like, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It was, yes.
I don't think I would have made it then. Right. I don't think I would have made
neither.
It, to be honest.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have made it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's just a different class of engineer. And it's like a different, I don't know. I just think I don't think I would have made it. I would have maybe been like a technician if I was lucky, you know?
Right. Right.
If I'm, you know, I'm kind of like technician now, but yeah.
Well, this thing is like, I'm surprised that they didn't use some gals or pals to actually consolidate some of these.
They had some non-dip stuff further down the board.
Yeah,
we've got a lot of descriptive stuff. Yep. There's 68,000. There's an MC 68,000.
There's a 68,000 process, but it's all, most of it, 80% of it is like 74 series logic, and there's some RAM up the top, so they've got a big
like
array
one of
the memory.
Big areas, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, and there's some analog stuff down the bottom, or is that just power? So, like they've got like pots, they've got sealed pots down the bottom of the board, so, yep.
Then
there's got a real-time clock board maybe with a battery on it.
Uh-huh.
So,
former battery. An add-on. Blob of glue.
Yep.
Yeah.
If I check out that part number, that's got to be a real-time. There's a Dallas Semiconductor. Oh, it's been chopped off.
Yeah. I'm not sure this thing's going to work, Dave.
I don't think it's going to work. But it's just a classic example. I've seen bigger. I've seen bigger than this, and I've like physically worked on bigger boards.
I can feel my fingers getting poked by all of the through-hole things.
Oh, all the through-holes in the bottom.
Wounds.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I used to work as a production tech. That was my first job. Yeah. And first, it was these cards, yeah. with the 19-inch racks and the
How much did it flex? If you didn't pick it up right, like, so say you just picked up one end.
Oh,
would the whole thing just like crack in half?
If you no, it doesn't, but there is warpage. And it depends on the orientation as well. Like if because all the chips are in one direction, that actually adds some stiffening to the board in that orientation. Whereas if you hold it on the opposite, so this board, if you held it on the top and the bottom, it would flex more than it would from right to left.
Side to side.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. So you're saying the if you held the long sides, it's okay. Yes. If you held the short ends, yeah, because this is like a what's the aspect ratio on this thing? Like a 5x2
yep
kind of
something like that although this ratio. One's a bit different because the because it uses sockets so if the chips are soldered in it's a bit more rigid because the chips actually work as a physical stiffener as well so
crazy.
I've worked on boards that have to use physical stiffening rods in them bars
like metal
and they solder down to the board and then there's the classic ones that have and then the bars not only can you use them as stiffening bars but they're also bus bars as well your ground and your power can go right across the board on these huge bus bars you would have layers of bus bars in going across the board.
That's a spicy bus bar.
It's great. It's fantastic stuff. And these ones would not be hand route. These would be completely auto-routed. Oh, yes, I can see some of the traces, right-angle traces everywhere.
Yeah.
These are all 100% auto-routed. Because that's what you did back in the day. You laid out all the chips all in the rows and all pin ones all facing the same direction. I guarantee you probably won't find a single chip on here with pin one in the opposite direction. I betcha.
I think I've already proved you wrong. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Oh, no. That's just marked differently. Oh, that's weird.
Okay.
I've seen one where there's like most of them are in the bottom left, you know, in the orientation.
Oh,
of these
I see what you're talking about. I can see one with left, two dimples. I can see one weird. With two dimples. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's definitely the top side. I think that's, you could tell, like, because it's also got the cutout dimple.
Yeah.
Right. Where it's like a half moon on the short side of a chip.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this has been an episode where we've been trying to describe a lot of things. I'm sure it's very frustrating for our listeners.
It's very frustrating, yeah.
Dave and I are doing fine. We can make it a video podcast, I guess, but you got to look at our ugly mugs and you don't want to do that.
No.
You don't want to. You see Dave. Not. He's fine.
No, you've seen me too many times.
Yeah. I'm all unshaven.
Right.
I barely leave the house. Why do I need to do anything? I haven't got a haircut in weeks.
I got a haircut yesterday.
Yep.
Home haircut. So you can
Oh, wow. Yeah. Saving money, huh? The economy's taking a downturn. Here we go, folks.
I actually enjoy it. It started
YouTubing
with the COVID
is not what it used to be.
Right. Yeah, got it. Save money where I can.
Yeah, no, my wife gave me haircuts during COVID. It was fine. She did a good, nice job. I think I like the experience of going out and getting one, though. It's a little different.
Oh, really? No, I don't.
Yeah.
Like
I'm
going
a city
to
dweller
local...
too, Dave. Like,
honey laundering operation at the local shopping center. I swear it's a money laundering operation.
Yeah. They don't actually cut your hair. They've
got far too many guys hanging around there that don't look like they're cutting hair. Let's just put it that way.
I see. Got it. Yeah. Well, they do say Australia is the shadiest of places. Yeah.
And let's just say that they're all of one particular.
We'll give you a haircut.
We'll give you a haircut, cheap. Cash.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yep. So I'm sure they bring in a pretty penny. I'm sure they actually earn a lot.
Right. Yeah, they always say that the money is in the haircutting, yes.
Only 10 people walk through the door, but they have $100,000 in cash income.
Yeah, right.
Oh, I love it. Yep. Money laundering for them. Anyway.
Is there anything else we should talk about? I don't know if there's any. I mean,
thanks
to our buddy Unmanaged to keep doing that stuff. Next week will be CN Lore. I actually recorded that interview yesterday, and it went fantastic. It's the CH32V003, the part that you also tested. He's got a library. And so we talked all about that and low-level chip design and RISC-V parts. So turned out pretty great.
Cool bananas.
All right.
That's it.
I will be in Prague. I'm not sure when the next show is after that. So Dave and I will discuss that after that. I will be in Prague. If you're in Prague for Embedded Open Source Summit, please do find me. I will be at a booth and walking around and giving a talk.
So. As always, there will be a prize if you can catch Chris looking
at Chris.
Chris sitting on the stand, just like.
Yeah, maybe not depressed, but probably jet lagged. Jet lagged for sure.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Have fun.
Thanks. See you.
Catch you next time.